show that is all baseball.
They're better than they were a year ago.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. Bigelow Tea, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, The 99 Restaurants, Sing Sang Cocktail in a Can, Winwaste Innovations, and Woodbridge Wines.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Slider to put him away and end the ball game. High drama again. The Red Sox win it by a final of 6-4.
Yeah, you got to get the 3-2 just to stay in safe so you can punch him out on a slider. But this is a big game for the Red Sox. Take 2 out of 3 from St. Louis. I'll tell you what, Pivetta showed me something. Walking, you know, pitched around 4 early walks. Ends up punching out 10 guys. Schreiber out of the bullpen, nicely done. And then, you know, Vasquez put a cap on this thing with a 3-run bomb.
Yeah, he was in the middle of the rallies late in the game. Vasquez was, and a couple of high wire acts here this weekend, Obi, but 2 wins out of 3 against the Cardinals, you'll take it every time.
Okay, so there we are. That's where we're going to start on the Baseball Hour. Red Sox, 6-4 winners over the St. Louis Cardinals. Yesterday, they take 2 out of 3. From the Cardinals, now 36-31, and still, at the moment, out of a playoff spot in the American League, but nonetheless, heading in the right direction. 13-4, I think they are in the month of June. Is that right? Did I read that somewhere? 13-4 in the month of June, the Red Sox are. So here are my questions to you out there today. 617-779-0985. And I already see Dean in Shrewsbury on the line. But I heard this a lot yesterday. I felt this going into the game yesterday. And by the way, Tim McCone is alongside. McBone will be here for the hour today. So I want to get his thoughts on this too. But I felt this going into the game yesterday. So, you know, without getting into too many of the details, for a lot of the Nesson pregame going in, we start discussing, well, what do you want to hit on? You know, how much time do we have in the pregame, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things that struck me was Nick Pivetta was on the mound. Nathan Eovaldi is out. Garrett Whitlock is out. It's the rubber game of a 3-game series with the Cardinals, who are leading the National League Central. I thought it was a big spot yesterday for Nick Pivetta. I thought it was a really big spot for Pivetta. That with those other two guys out of the rotation, someone needed to step up, fill the gap, get the win, and, you know, get the series win over St. Louis, who's a good team. That's a good team. The Cardinals are a good team. And the Red Sox did that, and I look at it in retrospect, and it was a big day for Pivetta. It was a bigger day for the team. And you heard X say it there at the end of the game. I felt it going in. I think Alex Cora touched on it, which we'll get to momentarily. But Nick Pivetta also talked about it after the game. In fact, I would say the players as a whole. I think Tanner Houck said something similar. But here is what Pivetta said after the game.
They work really hard. They do all the right things right. They have really good lineup, good pitching as well. And for us to come out with a 2 out of 3 is really huge for us. And to bounce back from that game last night as well, you know, that got away from us. But I think it just kind of sets in stone of what type of baseball team we are, how much hard work we're putting in as well, and how good our guys are kind of running right now.
So it feels to me like the Red Sox wanted to prove to themselves yesterday that they were one of these teams that belonged in the conversation with the playoff teams in the American League and what have you. And let me just say as an aside quickly, forget the effing Yankees. Okay, forget the Yankees. They're gone. They're gone. And I would say the same thing to the Blue Jays and the same thing to the Tampa Bay Rays. Forget them. The Yankees are gone. The only way anybody's going to catch the Yankees this year is if they fall back to the pack. That's it. Okay, New York's going to have to semi-collapse to blow this division. The Yankees could go 500 the rest of the way and win 97, 98 games. That's how far over 500 they are already, though they blew a game yesterday. So forget New York, forget the division. It really doesn't matter. The question is about the Red Sox now putting themselves in a position where come October, they can threaten the Yankees or anyone else that's on the same level. How do you get from here to there? So, the weekend with the Cardinals is a start. The Red Sox actually get outscored this weekend, so all the run differential people, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Right.
The Red Sox got outscored. They got blown out on Saturday night, but they won the other two. And frankly, they should have won them a little easier than they did. They almost had bullpen breakdowns in both games. But McBone, let me ask you, are you any more, does a series like that do any more to convince you that the Red Sox are going to be a playoff team?
A playoff team, I guess. Yeah, ultimately it does. But you also saw their flaws. Like you mentioned, on Friday night, that should have been a game that they won easily. The bullpen almost coughed that one up. You had the disaster that was Saturday. And so you still see some of these flaws. And I understand that they're going to get some of these pitchers back. But ultimately, to me, it feels like you're still short, especially in that bullpen, long term to be an actual contender here for in the American League.
Okay. But as of right now, do you believe there's enough there to invest?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so this is now, to me, the big story with the team. Like, if you look at where the Red Sox are, they have played nothing but dog food for a month. And I mean dog food. Boy, have they played some garbage. Wow, have they played some absolute crap on their schedule over the last month of the season. Not that it's their fault. The schedule is what it is. You play whoever's there. That's how it goes. But after that 10-19 start, now they went to Atlanta, and they played Houston in there. But other than that, Texas, Seattle, the White Sox who blow, a Baltimore series that the Red Sox lost. They split with Cincinnati, and then they got hot. Oakland, garbage. Maybe the worst or second worst team in the big
leagues. Terrible, yeah.
The Angels had lost 14 in a row, or by the Red Sox took the first three to extend the streak to 14. The Angels took the finale. That was the Shohei Ohtani game. The Red Sox then beat Seattle, who blows. Oakland, who really blows again. So St. Louis comes in there, and it's like, okay, well, now what do you got? What kind of team are we looking at here? And they took two out of three from St. Louis. And so I now look at it and wonder, what are they going to do at the deadline? Are they going to invest? Or let me rephrase. How aggressively are they going to invest in this team? And I think this is an important stretch for the Red Sox coming up to further convince ownership and upper management that they're worthy of it, and also for ownership and upper management to send the message to both the players and to the fan base that they will extend and make an aggressive deal when they need to. So the Chaim Bloom part of this is significant because Bloom was brought in to rebuild the Red Sox from the inside out. That was the whole reason to bring him in from Tampa Bay. The Rays have excelled at finding finding needles in haystacks, diamonds in the rough, use whatever analogy you want to use, or cliche. And they're good at it. And I would say overall, Bloom has done a decent job of that here.
Yeah.
Hunter Renfro was good in the first year. Nick Pivetta's turned out to be a nice find. Michael Wacha, another one that they picked up out of, you know, from Tampa Bay, and I say out of nowhere, but whose stock was low that they thought they could get more out of. They were right. So Bloom has done well with a lot of those moves. But my questions and concerns relate to the high-end talent. So these guys that, and I'm going to play something for you in the next segment that happened on the midday show today between Tyler Milliken and Beadle, which I thought was kind of funny. But it speaks to a bigger picture philosophy issue that I have with the Red Sox and with Bloom in particular. So the question is, do you believe, and what do you want the Red Sox to do at the deadline? That is the question. Do you want them to be bold? Because to me, there is a path for them to be championship caliber. I'm not sure they're quite there yet. Everyone looks at them and says exactly what McBone just said, which is, well, yeah, you know, they could probably make the playoffs. Murray said today, Jim Murray did, they'd make it by default. Because if you look around the American League, there's so much garbage out there, it's not going to take much for the Red Sox to get in the postseason, which he might be right. And their over-under total in Vegas has gone up since the start of the year. It's gone up by a couple of wins. I think it's now at 86.5. It started the year at 84.5. But I think that Vegas tells you that the Red Sox are playing a little bit better than they thought they would. And I thought the Red Sox would be right around a 90-win team, or they should be right around a 90-win team. And I think there's a way for them to get beyond that if everything falls into place, which we'll spell out in a minute. But at the deadline this year, whether the Red Sox want to admit this or not, they've lost the confidence of the fan base. And when I say that, I mean about their willingness to extend for high-level talent. And Trevor Story doesn't really qualify. At least not in my mind. McBone, does he qualify to you?
No, he doesn't.
Why not?
I just don't think that he's... When you talk about high-end talent, I'm talking about an absolute difference maker. And to me, Trevor Story isn't that guy. I also think when you're talking about the deadline, you bring up a good point too, because I think you know, for me, this felt like kind of a reboot last year. But when you actually look at the window for what the Red Sox have with kind of this core and this group moving forward, this is kind of it. Like, so if you actually do have a championship window right now, I feel like now's the time to actually invest in this group, because moving forward, you don't know what pieces are actually going to be here long term.
So this is my one consistent criticism of Chaim Bloom, who I think is a bright guy and by all accounts a good guy. Like, not that that matters. But is every decision going to be a long-term decision? Is he willing to take a risk? Is he willing to lose a trade to help the team? Is he willing to lose a trade in the long term to help a team or help the team? And so you can point to Kyle Schwarber from a year ago, but I think that the Schwarber deal really was appealing to the Red Sox because the price was low. Schwarber can't really play a position. He was injured at the time, and so Bloom was able to get him for a song. So he made the deal. But the Red Sox still have a hole at first base. They have clear needs in the bullpen. And I think this is a year where they should be aggressive and give up some talent from their system, or perceived talent. That's another one we'll get to in a minute, to help this team this year. Okay, we'll do that when we'll get further into that when we come back on the Baseball Hour. And I want to play the exchange between Tyler Milliken and Mark Bertrand today in the midday program. There were a couple of them, actually. Hopefully we can get to them all when we come back on the show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now more baseball and more math.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Juan Yepez coming in at 270 with five home runs, first and third. 3-1. Oh, my. That one is crushed, and it is gone. Yepez coming off the bench and smashes a three-run homer. And the Cardinals proving very tough to put away in a couple of games in this series. Was gone instantaneously. A three-run blast, and here comes Cora.
Yeah, he was looking. He got a sinker, and he's bailing and wailing and crushed it. Look at this little sinkage, and he's coming out of there with the barrel. And it got out of here in a hurry.
This was a rocket. I mean, this ball's tailing back into a mid-thigh. Oof.
That came off the bat at 114 miles an hour.
That's a rifle shot. That is an absolute laser.
So it's a two-run game.
So even in a win, the Red Sox give you a little something to nibble at, chew on. Happened Friday night, happened again yesterday. 6-1 both times. Had to hold on for dear life. Yesterday, Danish gave up a home run. It looked like it was shot out of a cannon. Did you see this thing?
Missile.
Yeah. Holy crap. It literally looked like it was shot out of a cannon, like it was a torpedo. Holy smokes, was that thing a rocket? Then on Friday night, the same thing happened. They gave up runs. So even when they win, the bullpen's failing. It's not like it's failing. It's not like it's dominating. You know, now Hauk got out of it both times, strikeouts both times to end the game. The fact that they had to go to him in either game should tell you plenty. They need help. And they need high-end help. So it's one thing to say we're going to go out on the market and get Austin Davis or whoever else, Hansel Robles, these fringe guys that cost you nothing. Those guys can help you win games if you use them right. Tampa Bay has made an art of it. Can they help you win a championship? We'll get to more on that in a minute, but let's take a couple of calls quickly. Again, 617-779-0985. Lines are open. We have a couple of calls already. Dean's in Shrewsbury. Dean, go.
I don't think the Red Sox are good enough to warrant going out and getting a rental player. I just think New York, the Astros, the Dodgers, and a couple of other NL teams are just so much more likely to win the World Series that giving up assets.
So, Dean, you give up?
For this season, you try to re-sign Bogarts and get somebody in free agency that's good.
Okay, what if you
for a long term?
Dean, what if you can't re-sign Bogarts and you're not in it next year?
I still don't think they're good enough to invest in.
Okay, I do. In that case, I would say, then why'd you sign Trevor Story? And your answer is going to be to safeguard you against Bogarts. So, again, everything's about the long term. Everything's about the long term. Then what are we doing focusing on the season for? I'll wait until you get good enough to win a championship. Why do I have to dig in every year? See, at some point, you have to cross that line. You have to show your roster and your fan base that you are willing to extend to win the championship, that you're willing to take a gamble, you're willing to take on some risk. At some point, you have to do that. It can't just be about pumping players out of your minor league system and becoming the Tampa Bay Rays. It can't. Not here. A lot of other places, yes. Here, no. Making the playoffs alone isn't good enough. So now if you think you can do it this way and pump out superstars from your system, great. I would tell you more often than not in Major League Baseball, it's going to take a few years for those guys to fully develop and become superstars. Look at Rafael Devers. He's now in his what you would call his fourth full big league season. So it's actually his fifth, right? It's actually his fifth full big league season. So it took him 5 years to get there. How many Rafael Devers are you going to get through the draft in an international marketplace? Those guys are hard to find. Then you're going to let them go because they cost too much? And you have to take a risk with a big contract and you reset and go right back. This is what happens in Tampa Bay. It's what happens in Oakland and what happens in the smaller markets. They never win in October, or rarely, because they don't have the high-end talent to compete with the teams that do. So how do you get the high-end talent? Now, I want to get to the pitching staff in particular, but this exchange that took place on the midday show today was a discussion about this. And they were talking about the trading deadline, the potential acquisitions, and Tyler Milliken, who's very much a big believer in, and I'm not criticizing Milliken for you, I'm just telling you which side he's on. Okay, I disagree with him, but Milliken's a good kid, and he likes baseball. But Milliken was talking about, he's very much in Bloom's camp of making the shrewd, prudent, cost-effective decision at all times, and finding cheaper players who are good players that can produce like almost like good players. And the first name you're going to hear mentioned here is Paxton. They're referring to James Paxton, whom the Red Sox signed to a team-friendly deal, dare I say, off of Tommy John surgery during the offseason. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Paxton actually cost real money.
It's just when you
But it's all in that same vein. Whether it's Waka, who's worked out,
and Nick
to Heimblum's credit.
Nick Pivetta.
Waka might be Heimblum's best move.
What about Nick Pivetta?
But it's that buy low, you know, you hope for the high sort of return on guys that you don't pay a lot of money to.
You've got that in Nick Pivetta. Austin Davis dealing for him. He's been one of your better relievers this year. Garrett Whitlock in the Rule 5 draft, someone that nobody cared for, nobody thought anything of. Question, what, you know, why are you taking a chance on this guy? What's he going to do for you? He's now arguably the best.
I don't think anyone was taking a chance on him.
No, when you go and grab someone like Garrett Whitlock and you put him on your big league roster or Rule 5 draft pick to see what happens, and people are saying, well, why are you putting guys like that in your big league bullpen? This is why, because you find gems like this.
Okay, so that's the whole point, which everyone gets that logic. Now, one of the other things Milliken said in this discussion as well was, well, look at the Nick Pivetta deal. That was a good deal. That guy's going to be a, you know, middle of the rotation guy for you for like, you know, two more years after this. True. Is a middle of the rotation guy going to win you a championship? Is a middle of the rotation guy going to do that? And the Whitlock thing, just for clarity's sake, I liked the move at the time. The Red Sox at the time, remember, were coming off the 2020 pandemic shortened season when they finished last. They were going to suck in 2021. They could carry a guy in the bullpen who was a Rule 5 kid. It was worth a shot. No one complained about that. Then we saw him, some of us earlier than others, and said, this kid's got something. And it turned out to be a lot more. Then they foolishly put him in the rotation. But that's another story for another day. But the point is, middle of the rotation, Nick Pivetta. He's going to be in the middle of the rotation for the next couple of years. And again, I hope I'm not putting words in Tyler's mouth. He contributes to this show. I like Tyler a lot. But I'm not looking for middle of the rotation guys or the Austin Davises of the world in the bullpen. Are they functional big leaguers? Yes. Is Bloom good at those moves? Yes. Are those the guys that are going to win you a championship? Can you give Austin Davis the ball in the eighth and ninth inning in a World Series game or an LCS game in New York or Houston or L.A.? Because I don't think he can. That's my opinion. Okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Bloom will get him to a title. But to me, you're going to have to extend yourself at some point. If you want a championship, at some point you got to do it. Shane's in Watertown. Go ahead, Shane.
Chris Sale is going to come back in July. I know for a fact this is a playoff team. We have a playoff team. Chris Sale is going to give this.
Oh, God, I dropped him. That was a mistake. I didn't mean to drop you. Call back if you want. 617-779-0985. Rusty's in a car. I think it's on the same along the same lines. Good, Rusty.
Yeah, it is, Mass. But, you know, my point is if Paxton and Sale don't come back to be 1-2, then what do we do with Bogarts? I don't think they're going to sign him. So is there any way you can get anything? I know that we don't want to get rid of him, but can we get rid of him to get something if they're not going to actually re-sign him?
Okay, so look, right now they're in it. I'm not trading Bogarts if I'm in it. McBone, are you?
No, absolutely not.
What the hell would you do that for?
No,
here's
can't.
The other thing. I lived the John Lester experience. Okay, the John Lester experience, well, they're out of it, trade him, maybe you can sign him back. How did that work out? He wanted nothing to do with that. He didn't want to come back here. Once you sever that cord, it's over. So I don't want to do that with Bogarts. Now, if they're out of it, of course I'm trading him. And you don't think you can sign him? Yes. Yes, but if you're in it, first of all, if you're in it, I'm keeping him anyway because you can make a run independent of whether or not you can sign him. So, but the part about Paxton and Sale, McBone, what do you hate more than anything about quote-unquote deadline pickups? You said this earlier today. Do you remember?
Yeah, the fact that an injured player is coming back and then ownership tries to sell that's a big move. That's essentially acquiring a player at the deadline. It's the equivalent. No, it's not. It's not the same thing. You can't sell that as a big move at the deadline is bringing back Chris Sale, who, by the way, you talked about this earlier. He is making a rehab start tonight down in Florida.
Oh, it's tonight. Okay, yeah. I thought it was today. So it's tonight. So we'll have some info on that. I think he's supposed to go like 5 innings.
That's what, yeah, yeah. 7 o'clock.
I mean, for a rehab start, that's out of the gate. That's a lot. Like, it feels to me like they feel like he's pretty far along. They're moving him along. Usually the first one you figure out is about 3 innings. He's going 5. The first one might even be 2 innings. So, but as it relates to what the caller was saying a couple of calls ago, the one I foolishly dropped, forget James Paxton, first of all. James Paxton had Tommy John surgery. We all saw what that looks like when the guy comes back. Chris Sale did it last year. He's not the same guy. Doesn't mean he's a bum. He can help you, but he's not going to be himself in the postseason. He's not going to be himself till next year, which is why the Red Sox wanted an option on that deal. Sale is a little different. Sale is now 2 years removed from Tommy John, and he pitched last year. Now, last year he was throwing 93. Tonight we'll get another look, but in that workout session at Fenway last week, he threw 96. Cora said he looked way better than he did a year ago. I believe him because I believe in that whole Tommy John timeline. I think it's a real thing, and history has shown that. So could Sale help the Red Sox? Yes, as long as something else doesn't go wrong. And if they can get Eovaldi back, and if that means they can put Whitlock back in the bullpen, then I think maybe you might be able to make a run at a championship if you also make a significant deal at the deadline and extend yourselves a little. That's a lot of ifs. A lot of ifs are never good, McBone.
No.
When you have a lot of ifs, that's usually not a good thing. So I'm trying to paint you a very happy picture here. But we'll continue with your phone calls. They're in it. Now Sale's going to come back. They got a big stretch of games coming up. Whitlock could be back in a week. So you're in pretty good shape. Extend yourselves at the deadline. We'll continue with your phone calls after McBone gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, you got to keep rolling. We got to keep going, you know, and every series for us is a challenge, and it's because we started the way we started, and we got to keep working hard to get to where we want to go. They have a good team, but we do believe we have a good team too, and now we got Detroit, and same deal, you know, win tomorrow to get two shots and, you know, try to win the series, and then we keep moving and keep going. We know where we at in the standings, and, you know, obviously, you know, there's a team out there that they're doing something very special, and but at the end of the day, we understand that it's to get there, and to get there, we have a lot of work to do. But we put ourselves in a situation that we're in the conversation now, and we just got to keep playing better.
And that's Alex Cora after yesterday's win over the Cardinals. And I think it was a good weekend series for the Red Sox. Take two out of three from that team. What were almost road games with all the Cardinals fans in the ballpark at Fenway Park. So, you know, you take two out of three from that team when you're shorthanded on top of it. No Eovaldi, no Whitlock. Cutter Crawford pitched the one game you lost. He's not even on the roster anymore. They replaced him, so he's gone. That was a good win. So then the series was a good win. The question now becomes whether or not ownership and management will fully get behind this team and, again, extend themselves to add something to the roster at the deadline, potentially losing a trade to help the team, whether or not they would do that or whether or not they're just going to keep looking for economical deals that'll get you, you know, middle of the rotation, middle of the bullpen guys, but not high-end talent that can impact a race. Okay, not that kind of player. And they could use that kind of player. Red Sox made a roster move today as well, which is brings me to Anthony on the Cape. What do you got, Anthony?
Yeah, Tony. I mean, you know, you've been dumping on Heim Bloom all day for what he's going to do at this year's trade deadline. I thought that was a Felger and Mass commandment. We're not going to get people in trouble for what they haven't done yet.
Well, I'm not just bitching today about what he's going to do in July. I'm looking at the whole body of work in terms of the kind of moves they have made, and I think there's a pattern there now that they are making only safe moves, which, again, is a great way to build an organization, but I don't think it's a great way to win a championship.
Listen, last year was last year. This year is this year. The team's in a different place. Chris Sale's in a different place. And Heim Bloom has done a phenomenal job rebuilding this organization from the ground up while maintaining a very competitive major league club, which brings me to Jeter Downs.
Okay, go.
How many times have you seen him play yet, Tony?
I haven't.
Exactly. And you're already dumping on this guy just because of his AAA stats. This guy, give this guy a chance. Would you rather have Jonathan Araúz called up? You should be excited that they're calling up. They're starting to call up some of these prospects, and hopefully Cassis can get healthy. We can call him up at some point. You should be excited they're starting to turn over this roster with young ball players.
Okay, so Anthony, again, what I want is both. What I want is both. I want young and old. Because old guys win championships, not old guys, you know what I mean, experienced guys. You got to have both. Just about every good championship team I've ever seen has a good blend of experience, talent, youth, because the young guys are hungry. The old guys know that not every four-game losing streak is the end of the world, so the team gets balanced out. I like both. And, no, I haven't seen Jeter Downs, except for some highlights of him. I've never seen him in person. Okay? And let me tell you this. I should be glad that a guy who's hitting .180 in the big leagues. So, first of all, why are you calling him a prospect when he's hitting .180? And last year he hit .220. Like, what is with that? He's not a prospect. And he's only here because Christian Arroyo's on the COVID list and they don't have a backup infielder. And Araúz is gone. Otherwise, Araúz was here before this guy was. So I'm supposed to get excited about Jeter effing Downs? Oh, go blow it out your ears. Seriously, I'm supposed. There's a lot of things you can get on me for. Not being excited for Jeter Downs shouldn't be on the list. John's in Hudson, New Hampshire. John, go ahead.
Hi, Tony. I couldn't agree with you more. I just want to get some quick points out. Chris Sale hasn't pitched in 2 years, and he's going to be our savior. I look for him to throw, and something happened to his arm. He's not going to be a full-time starter the rest of the year. I want him to sign Bogarts, and I want him to sign Devers. Bogarts, I believe, is 29, and Devers is 25. I want them. Why wouldn't I want two of the best hitters and players in baseball? And Story is not as good as Bogarts. And I don't trust Bloom. I don't trust him to make...
Okay, John, I got you. I got you, and I want all those guys, too. Okay, all I'm saying is, look, when you're the Red Sox, you should be able to do it all. I have always felt this way, and I will never change my mind. In this market, with this fan base and their resources, they should be able to draft and develop, to sign free agents and retain good players. They should be able to do it all. And under Theo Epstein, they basically did. I think they finally had a GM there who actually figured it out for a little while. Dombrowski went too far one way, too aggressive. Ben Cherington was too conservative. I feel like Bloom's on the Cherington side. So, and Jimmy, you were going to interrupt when I was losing my mind with Anthony there. He gets under my skin, but I do like him. What were you going
to
say?
I was just curious as to what Jeter Downs' expected batting average and OPS was instead of what it actually was. Maybe that's why he got the call up to the big leagues.
So this very good, Jimmy. Excellent. Well done. So the strikeouts with Jeter Downs are off the charts. Like,
are those expected strikeouts or actual strikeouts?
I should be happy that they're bringing in young players. Anthony, I'm happy when they bring in good players. Good players. That's what the goal is. McBone, is that you breathing?
Yeah, he struck out 69 times in 220 plate appearances so far this season.
How many hits does he have?
He has 34 hits.
Okay, he was expected to have 56 by this time.
Okay, so 69 strikeouts, 34 hits. So a guy who strikes out twice as much as he gets a hit. That's good? That's a prospect? So look, if he starts hitting, great. And the only reason he's here is because Arroyo is on the COVID list.
He was expected to be a prospect.
Bo is in Dallas. Go ahead, Bo. Very good, Jimmy. Go, Bo. What do you got?
Hey, Maz. Thanks for taking the call. You've been great on the broadcast. Quick idea for you here. Why? Let's say we could throw in JBJ, Duran, Ref Snyder, and Franchi by committee for center field and right field, and then maybe make a trade with Kike and a prospect for a bullpen arm. Those four guys have been great for the Red Sox, and a trade for a bullpen guy would show the team that we're here to win now. And those four guys, I think, could get it done in center and right for us.
Okay, so here's what I would tell you. Generally speaking, I don't want to take away from the big league roster to add to the bullpen. Okay, I generally don't want to do that. I don't consider Franchi Cordero a long-term part of the big league roster. Some of the other guys you mentioned, I feel the same way. If you want a bullpen piece, you're going to probably have to give up someone with some talent in the minor leagues. Which brings me to another thing about GMs. The good ones identify which prospects are the real prospects and which ones aren't. So they know. So they look at it and they say, no, we like this guy better than the other guy because they're intangibles, or his bat's not quite quick enough, or he can't hit the slider, or he can only hit, you know, left-handed pitching, which he's only going to play 2 days a week, something like that. Know your own players. And I think the ones that are willing to take the take the aggressive step usually can deal off the prospects that I always call them kind of fake prospects. I wouldn't even call Jeter Downs a fake prospect. You're freaking 69 strikeouts and 35 hits. He's hitting a .180. Who's going to be fooled by that? Seriously, what if there's a GM out there that thinks he's going to turn around Jeter Downs and give up an elite reliever for him? That guy should be fired. You don't make that kind of deal.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Now more baseball and more Mavs.
Okay.
This is the Baseball Hour with Tony Mavs on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
He'll drive that one to right field deep. Carlson's back, and it is gone into the bullpen. And it does appear that Trevor Story is coming back.
Hello.
And the Red Sox have a 1-0 lead.
Home run for Trevor Story yesterday at Fenway Park. I thought this one was a good sign. Story hit the ball to right field, and over the last few games really has had a number of balls he's hit that way, which again I think is always a good sign with a guy like him. Maybe means he's starting to expand his approach a little bit or alter his approach a little bit. I think generally speaking, Story's been a guy who's been pull happy, has done damage on balls on the inner part of the plate that have been off speed or, I say, relatively low velocity. He's got three hits in his last three games, one each. So over that time, it's 3 for 11, but in a home run, three RBI, maybe some of the production starting to come again. My one real complaint with Story to this point, and I was on him pretty good early in the year, I thought Story was just way too easy and out early in the season. And then he got hot for about 3 weeks. Then he cooled off. And so when you weigh it out over the, you know, the entire season, he's really only done anything for a third of the time. The batting average is still too low. I'd like to see less spikes, fewer spikes in his performance, a little more consistency. I mean, the average is 221. I know everybody loves on base now. That's 304. That's still low. So he should be better than that. Now, again, if he's your second baseman and Bogaerts is your shortstop, no problem. I can live with it. If he is, because his defense is good and he's an excellent base runner. But if he's your starting shortstop and now he's got to replace a guy who hits in the middle of your batting order, Nope, not good enough. I need more out of that guy. Take a couple of more calls here. Steve's in Rockland. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, Maz, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, loud and clear.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. Maz, I just have one quick question, a basic question. Do you think there's a possibility that Chaim Bloom came from the Tampa Bay organization and he's still trying to manage it like the Tampa Bay Red Sox, not the Boston Red Sox? You have to spend money. I'll hang up and listen, Maz.
Yeah, so Steve, I think that's exactly what's happened. And again, I would also say I think that's exactly what Red Sox ownership wanted to happen. So Chaim Bloom's idea of running a major league organization, he was an assistant in Tampa, but was forged there. It was formed there. And Tampa Bay is very, very good at making a lot out of a little. So let's not delude ourselves into thinking that the Tampa Bay Rays suck at what they do. They don't. They're good at it. They're really good at it. But they haven't won any championships. And so the question is why? And the Oakland A's, during the Moneyball phenomenon, didn't win a championship. In fact, they only won one playoff series, I think, if I remember that right. It was against the Minnesota Twins, who are a similar kind of organization. So, again, they do a nice job of putting teams together, but they don't win. They don't win the championship. They just get in. They give you a pretty good product in a small market. They give you an excellent product for what it costs. But when they have to face the big boys in the big games, they typically lose. And so it's all well and good to say, well, you can go out and find the Nick Pavettas of the world, who's pitching like an ace right now, but is really probably a middle of the rotation guy. Or guys in other organizations that, you know, take your pick, Michael Walker, who's not what he was when he came up, but is a functional big league pitcher. And if you put a good lineup around him, he'll win games. And I would say, generally speaking, that's how the Red Sox have been built the last 2 years. They have a really good lineup, a really good core of the lineup, with Devers, Martinez, and Bogaerts in the middle. So their offense is going to score, and they got pitchers who are pretty decent, which means middle of the rotation guys, but you have a front of the rotation offense, if you will. So you're going to pummel teams when if you had better pitching, you might be threatening for a championship. That's really my grunt. Jimmy, I froze up here. Sean is in Salem. If we could punch him up. Sean, you there?
Yep, I'm here. What's up? Yeah, you know, he does a great job putting young teams together of unproven players that win you a lot of games in the regular season and puts you in a good position in the playoffs. Doesn't mean you're going to win, like you said, but I think it had a lot to do with always having home field advantage, whatnot. But looking off the field, let's look at Jeter Downs, and I'm willing to give him, you know, a little bit of a pass, because if you were him, look at what you're looking at. You see Story coming in, you're coming off a bad year. Where's there room for you to grow within the organization? And now you bring him up. What type of dynamic within the locker room do you think that brings to Bogaerts? And even what does Story do with that dynamic? Because I don't feel like they're the type to sort of hop in and help the guy along the way to take their spot, essentially. Not Story, yeah. But Bogaerts.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Sean. Here's what I would tell you. I don't think Jeter Downs is a threat. I don't think Jeter Downs is a threat. I don't know why people keep seeing it this way. And, go ahead.
I don't know what planet we're on where we keep getting these Jeter Day. Like you said, he's got, 69 strikeouts, 35 hits, and he's hitting 180. In Worcester.
This guy's not a threat. Marcelo Mayer, who's drafted last year, is a way bigger threat than Jeter Downs is for either one of these guys. So, look, again, just you got to get this out of your head. People are focusing on the Jeter Downs part because he was, in theory, a significant part of the deal for Mookie Betts. Ever since he's got here, he's been terrible. He's not a prospect. He's not ready for the big leagues. He's nowhere close to ready for the big leagues. So just quickly before we go, because I really should do this, Rodenheiser is looking to grow their winning. It's my Rodenheiser hot take. They're looking to grow their winning team with full-time plumbing and HVAC technicians as well as warehouse staff. Apply today at careers.rodenheiser.com. Tigers are in town tonight for a three-game series. And let me tell you, eat while the eating's good. This is another lamb being led to slaughter. The Tigers blow. You're at home. Beat the crap out of them for 3 days because after this, it gets real fast. From June 24th, Friday, until the All-Star break on July 17th, the Red Sox will play Cleveland, Toronto, and then 14 games against Tampa and New York, 7 each. In the middle, you have a 3-game series against the Cubs just to catch your breath and beat the crap out of someone else because they stink. But between now and the All-Star break, the Red Sox are going to legitimately show us whether they're worth investing in, and if they come out on the other side, still breathing, still in the middle of it, then I don't know how the Red Sox justify not investing significantly in this team. We'll catch you tomorrow on the Baseball Hour. McCarthy, do you have the show tonight?
No, we've got Christian Arcand.
Okay, Arcand and McCarthy have you, and McCarthy's get your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.